At the tone, the time will be exactly...
Time for the Mo Kelly Show.
Set it off, Mr. Mo Kelly.
Mo Kelly
Show.
Turn it up, ladies.
Mo Kelly.
Here we go again.
Mo Kelly
Show.
Next on the Mo Kelly Show, Southern California was filled with people in the streets this weekend, some welcoming the president, some protesting Turkey, some protesting the closure of Disneyland, you name it. R. Kelly was beat down in jail and nobody helped him. And Die Hard is back. Well, sort of, but it is back.
And now, ladies and gentlemen,
Mo Kelly.
Mr. Mo Kelly here, KFI AM 640. We're live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. This is the Mo Kelly Show. And oftentimes I do start off with presidential politics. It's the big story, not just here, but around the world. Electing a president matters, not only here in the United States, but it has implications everywhere else around the world. And it's one of those things that we all have some sort of interest in. Now, sometimes we could have just a waning interest, or we could have an altogether obsessive interest, but we care. We're paying attention. And I notice that, you know, whenever I just get in casual conversations with people, be it online or whatever, someone always feels the need to tell me who they think is going to win, who they want to win. And honestly, I don't get into those conversations. They'll say, Mo, Trump 2020 in a landslide. And I always try to caution that person, or that they think Biden's going to take it. Everything's working against the president. And I try to caution that person. Nobody knows what is going to happen November 3rd. If you think you know, you're lying. You are absolutely lying. There are indicators that we can look at to get an idea, but nobody knows what's going to happen. I could probably tell you that I think the winner of the election is going to have more than 70 million votes. But I can't tell you how that's going to play out over 50 states. I can't tell you specifically what's going to happen in Pennsylvania, what's going to happen in Florida, what's going to happen in Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin. Because if I could, definitively, then I could declare who was going to win the election, because those states will have the largest say. But that aside, people always want to tell me who's going to win the election. You don't know. I don't know. Nobody knows. Everyone is just telling me who they want to win the election, who they're betting on. That's it. Because no one has that aggregate of information of knowing how 150 to 180 million people estimated this time around will be voting, and where those votes exactly will fall in an electoral college sense. That said, there are some interesting indicators. There are things that we can look at in history and say, that's peculiar. Usually when a presidential candidate does X, that usually means Y. Like, for example, heretofore, I can't think of another time in which a presidential candidate who was also the incumbent did a live in-person fundraising event. And I was looking. If it has happened, I wasn't able to find it. But to do a live fundraising in-person event 16 days before the election, that's the first thing. And also do it in a state in which that president or presidential candidate is not even competitive. Despite who we may say may win the election, or who we want to win the election, I don't think anyone seriously believes that California is going to go to Donald Trump or is competitive. I mean, that's just fact. He lost it by 3 million votes in 2016. I don't think he's closed that gap. So that said, knowing that the president came to Newport Beach today and was charging $2,800 for a plate, up to $150,000 to be a co-chair for fundraising, seemed rather odd to me. It raised my eyebrow. It's something that in my history of just studying presidential elections, I don't remember ever seeing. Because think of it this way. When a president has to do an in-person function, that takes that presidential candidate off the campaign trail. And if there are states in doubt, and there are, If there are states that the president would like to shore up, and there are, if there are states that could go either way and the president could be better served by campaigning in those states, and they surely are out there, you would think a day off the campaign trail, a whole day in which he has to come to California, come to this event, you know, shake hands, kiss babies, time would be better spent elsewhere. So obviously this fundraising event is hugely important to the president. But historically, usually these campaigns are on fundraising autopilot at this point. Everyone knows that the election is coming up. You shouldn't have to drum up that type of financial support this close to the election, historically at least. So what can we glean from that? What can we take away from that? Obviously, money is an issue on some level. Obviously, the president's campaign is having difficulty with some of their ad buys around the country in some of those battleground states. And there's something else to this. And this is just me spitballing. This is just my theory. I believe the president is fundraising, not necessarily for the election, but for the fight after the election. Not necessarily to change people's minds in the days leading up to November 3rd, but possibly to make sure that he has a financial war chest available to pay for all the lawyers for the inevitable legal fights, which are going to happen after the election in those battleground states, in states like Ohio and Michigan and Pennsylvania and Florida. If they're close enough and he would like to allege that there's some sort of voter fraud, or he wants to sue or ask for some sort of injunction before these results can be certified, you got to have lawyers for that. And that's going to be a legal fight, presumably, which could take weeks if the lawsuits are seen to have some degree of merit and not tossed out. You're going to need to have a lot of lawyers on retainer, and you're going to have a slew of them available for these different cases in different states. So when I see the president coming to California, a state by, you know, just about everyone will tell you, is not in play to take a day off the campaign trail, 16 days or so before the election, specifically to raise money, it says two things which are very eyebrow raising. One, the president's campaign is short on money. It shouldn't be. And we can also point to the times in which the president said, if need be, he will put in some money from his own pocket. Clearly, he's not going to do that. That's the first thing we can recognize. And also, we should be able to keep the door open for this is not necessarily about raising money specifically for the campaign, but possibly, or I would say probably, the fight after the election, because he's put all the pieces in place. He's made it very clear. He has been, I would say, sowing the seed. He has been tilling the ground. He's been making the case in advance to claim fraud. Now, whether there's any merit to that, that's a whole different discussion for a different day on a different show. But he's making it very clear he's already said that he's not going to accept any result with the exception of the one that he wins. He's going to say that, well, he has already said that the only way he doesn't win, that it's rigged, which is ridiculous on its face. But that's the card that he's going to play. And if you take him at his word, and I do take him at his word, if he's going to play that card, then he has to make sure that there are pieces in place to file these lawsuits at a moment's notice, and he can financially fund these lawsuits and these legal efforts on his behalf. And you got to make sure you have that money in place prior to the election, because going back to the history of presidential elections, the fundraising that you do 2 weeks before the election is not going to have a tremendous impact on the election itself. Let's say the campaign is completely broke. Well, I'm quite sure you'll have campaign workers who will work for you for another week and a half or two and not necessarily realize they're not getting paid. There's a way that you can finagle that. But if you're trying to have an extended fight in the courts, no, you're actually going to need money for that. I would be concerned if I were a member of the Trump campaign and there's this need for money at this late date, and it is such that it takes the president off the campaign trail. And I'm just speaking as a politico. It is not determinative. It doesn't mean that the president is on the verge of losing an election. But I will tell you this. There's no place that the president would rather be than on the campaign trail. Don't tell me that he would much rather do a private event in front of, I don't know, 100 or 150 people and watch one original member of the Beach Boys perform. Don't tell me he would rather do that than be in a battleground state and in front of a huge rally of, I don't know how many people playing the hits and trying to make the case in front of America. Remember, this is a private event. He's not going to be on TV. He's not going to be seen. This is a whole day for the most part in which he's kind of absent from the presidential race in a public sense. Don't tell me he would much rather be at a private event than on a campaign trail making public remarks about Hillary, about Obama, about Sleepy Joe Biden and Hunter Biden and the computer and the emails. He would much rather do that. Oh, he'll do that tonight, but it'll be on a much smaller scale. It's weird that he's fundraising in this way, at this moment, in this manner, at this time, in this state. When we come back, you know, there's a difference between fearing COVID and respecting COVID. And I'm going to use Chris Christie to delineate the difference between the two. And we need to stop saying that people are fearful of COVID when it's actually a lack of respect and reverence for the danger of it. This is the Mo Kelly Show, KFI AM 640, live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. Now Danny Max has the news.
Free flu shots will be available at select locations in Los Angeles starting this week. Walgreens and CVS will give free COVID-19 vaccines to nursing home residents.
Mr. Mo Kelly here, KFI AM 640, live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. And let me just say this. Reality is more than just your friends, family, and neighbors. I'll say it again. Reality is more than just your family, friends, and neighbors. And sometimes we get caught up, me included. We get caught up and we're a prisoner of our immediate environment. And we want to make that into reality writ large. And oftentimes it's not. In fact, none of the time it is. But we sometimes get caught up in that. Let me give you an example. Like back in, I would say 2010, and a lot of the country had bottomed out. Some people would say, well, I don't think it's a great recession. Everyone in my family has a job, and you know, all of my friends and neighbors, they're doing okay. No, see, that's being a prisoner of your environment because you're ascribing what is happening in your immediate world to everywhere else. That's not necessarily reality. You know, your neighborhood is not Dubuque, Iowa. It's not Billings, Montana. It's not Fayetteville. So think of that when we discuss COVID. And unfortunately, I hear from a lot of people who say, well, I don't know anyone who's died from COVID-19, or I don't know of anyone who's come down with it and had to go to the hospital. And they wrongly, and I mean this, they wrongly then think that COVID-19 is neither dangerous nor deadly because they're ascribing their immediate circumstances and friends, family, and neighbors to something much more broad in nature. And you shouldn't. And what I find is, and you'll see these stories time and time again, the person who will say, I didn't think COVID-19 was all that serious until I got it for myself. Or finally, it does break their bubble and someone within their friends or family or neighbors comes down with it or, heaven forbid, dies from it. And I'm a person, you don't have to wait for something bad to happen to respect the danger of something. And far too many times people confuse being fearful of something, especially in this COVID-19 environment, with in actuality respecting the danger of it. And I see time and time again where people say, well, why don't we open up the schools? Why are we living in fear? No, it's not living in fear. We're respecting that there are all sorts of unintended consequences and consequences that we just don't want for either our children or administrators and teachers and so forth. And this was brought to light, no clear example than former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie. And you will hear in his voice, yesterday he was saying he thought one thing, he believed he was safe because he was in one particular environment. Hear him. And then it changed his whole thinking of COVID-19. Listen to this.
I was led to believe that, you know, all the people that I was interacting with at the White House had been tested, and it gave you a false sense of security. And it was a mistake. but I let my guard down. And it was wrong. It was just a big mistake. And what I want people to learn more than anything else is I was doing it right for 7 months and avoided the virus. And I think we need to be honest with the American people and just say directly to them that we don't know everything we need to know about this disease at this point, George. But what we do know is that masks can certainly help.
He was talking to George Stephanopoulos on ABC. That's Chris Christie, who spent 7 days in the ICU. Twala, you've been in the ICU probably on more than one occasion. Am I wrong?
Yes, I have.
What does that mean, being in the ICU? What does that usually entail?
Oh, that's round-the-clock observation, probably medication, intensive care. When I was in there with shingles, which turned into a staph infection, I was in a room where they could not enter without a full-on, you know,
like a hazmat
overall
suit,
mask, helmet, everything. And you're isolated by yourself, filled with medicine. It's not a good look.
When Governor Chris Christie says that he was in ICU for 7 days, and he ended up there because he wrongly believed that he was, one, in a safe environment, and two, if you read a little bit into what he was saying, that there was not a real danger in regard to COVID-19. That's how he ended up in the ICU for 7 days. And if you're in the ICU for 7 days, don't let anyone else tell you otherwise. It's touch and go. It's that serious, and you can die. And my only admonition is you don't have to wait for it to hit you personally. You don't have to wait for someone that you know and love to die for you to think that this is actually serious and real. And this goes back to, and I know we're running over, but I have to mention this. This goes back to the protests which happened yesterday at Disneyland here in Southern California, how they were making an economic argument as far as opening up the amusement park. I wish people would see our numbers are rising all over the place. Our numbers are rising in terms of infections, hospitalizations, and deaths. But unfortunately, people may not feel it in their immediate environments, so they don't perceive a real danger. But when you have someone like Governor Gavin Newsom, who I disagree with on most things, I understand that his first responsibility is protecting people within California from death. And although you in your neighborhood may not think that it's a big deal or that it's very dangerous or you don't know of anyone who's died from it or who's ended up in a hospital from it, he doesn't have that luxury. And honestly, you really don't have that luxury. We're getting ready to go into November. The temperature is going to be dropping everywhere. And if your main concern is being able to go to Disneyland so you can have a little more joy, I think your priorities are misplaced. I would not wish an ICU visit on anybody.
No.
Anybody.
No, it's not fun. It's not fun, Mo.
I wouldn't even flirt with anything like that.
Yeah.
It's scary. And imagine 7 days. And I understand you can't tell people what's important to them and what is worthy of being protested. All I'm saying is the moment you find someone in your private environment, family, friends, or neighbors, who ends up in the ICU or dead because of COVID-19, you will probably change your tune in the way that Chris Christie did. So all I'm saying is, why don't you just go ahead and skip that step altogether? There's a difference between fearing something and also respecting the danger of something. This is the Mo Kelly Show, KFI AM 640, live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app, WTF News. When we come back, Danny Max with the news right now.
A voter registration deadline in California is quickly approaching. Applications have to be filed.
Oh my God, Becky.
What the?
Oh, hell no!
Oh, hell no!
You gotta be kidding me.
What the?
KFI AM 640, we're live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. This is the Mo Kelly Show. Let me just tell you, and if you don't already know, I don't particularly care to fly. It's just an unpleasant experience for me. I'm not so afraid of flying that I'm not going to get on a plane because I like to travel. I like to see different parts of the world, but I really don't like to fly. And it gets worse, if you will, as I get older. And then there's just being on the plane and the nuisances of the travel experience. Let's just put it this way. I'm on the other side of 45, and so I may need to go to the bathroom more than once in a flight. And so I have to think about those things. I don't like flying in those small compartments. Maybe I'm getting more claustrophobic as I get older. I dislike everything about it. But I've never had the situation where I had to wake up to someone urinating on me. Thank goodness. A woman flying from Las Vegas to Detroit says that she woke up mid-flight to a man urinating on her. And, you know, that's bad. That's bad. But it turns out the guy was a or is a pastor from North Carolina. Alicia Beverly, perfect story for a Sunday. Alicia Beverly says the incident occurred on a Delta flight from Las Vegas to Detroit. Beverly says that she was returning home from a vacation that up until that point had been pretty much fun. Yeah, you don't want to ruin your vacation, but this would. She told the news outlet that most people on a red-eye flight were asleep when she was awakened by something that felt warm. Quote, "I jump up and I see his private area out and I screamed, and that woke everybody up. By that time, I actually looked at him and I see him shake himself off. And I'm like, this man just, you know, on me. I looked and there was a puddle of pee in the seats."
Oh, geez.
"There was an off-duty police officer on the plane to restrain the man. Now, that has never happened to me, but I can say pretty confidently, if I were her, I probably would have ended up with duct tape and they would have taped me to a seat because I would have beat the crap out of that man. I would have beat him something awful. And then the FBI would have to come arrest me when the plane actually landed, because there's no way in the world that that was going to end without a physical confrontation. I don't even want to speculate as to why he did it, whether he was drunk, whether he was on Ambien. It doesn't matter. All I'm saying is if it happened and I was the person in the seat next to him, and I'm not saying that to be a tough guy. I'm saying that that's the only reasonable response that I think I would have. Eric, would you have a different response?
If I woke up to somebody peeing on me, I'm swinging the second I open my eyes.
Right.
The second I open my eyes, I'm swinging on you.
There's not a conversation like, what are you doing? No, we're not even have that conversation. Tawala, maybe you're different. How does that story end?
The headline would have read, "Pastor castrated after urinating on man on flight." That's the headline. That's the correct headline for a story like this.
There's no other way that that story is going to end without me going to jail. As unfortunate as that may sound, because there's no way I can talk myself down off of that for the next hour and a half of the flight or however long we're in the air. No,
she had to sit in wet clothes for several more hours.
Right. Right. No. I am whooping his ass in front of everybody.
Wait. The airline couldn't give her like an extra like stewardess outfit. Nothing. They couldn't change her clothes.
No, they're in mid flight. They're not going rummaging through the stuff down and below. No,
she better have something in her overhead bin.
Give her like one of the blankets for a red eye or something.
Well, I'm with Eric on this too. You know, there's so many people have carry on luggage with clothing. Don't you think a passenger might have said, "Hey, I've got change."
I don't know.
Look,
I don't know. It doesn't say that in the story.
No, not to fly this airline because no one helped her. No way.
Danny, are you beating him down or are you going to politely have a conversation with this man?
Normally, I'm with you guys, but I, like you, Mo, am a really bad flyer. And I'll be honest, I actually was given a prescription to take a Xanax before I flew. I was just on a plane recently and I was so mellow. I don't even think that would have woken me up.
Well, better you than me because I'm waking up. Ooh. Okay, let's talk about marriage. Hopefully this will be a better story. Let's go to the Booby Trap Club in Florida. There was a boyfriend of one of the employees, Leah. Well, Leah became a fiance that night. Her boyfriend proposed to the stripper on stage before she went to work, and it was caught all on video. And the scene, you know, you would think, like, I wonder if he proposed to her with that song from T-Pain, "I'm in Love with a Stripper." I'm in love with a Okay, I cannot say that I've ever fallen that hard for a stripper, but I have dated a stripper or two or 12 in my lifetime.
Yeah, I have to.
And I think that's a if you worked in the music industry or radio, there's probably a stripper in your history.
Yeah, I can't even be mad at this girl. Like,
I guess I haven't worked in radio long enough.
No, oh, keep on living. Keep on living.
This was damn near me, so that's why I'm quiet. I'm like,
did you notice that Danny is awful quiet? He's like church mouse. Don't even bring this conversation my way, because then I might have to tell on myself. I'll let you off the hook, Danny. I won't even look your way.
Thanks for
I'm just noticing that you didn't say anything. Before we go to break, we have one more feel-good story. And this is local in nature. A man has been sentenced to jail for repeatedly, as in, you know, more than once, putting semen in his coworker's food. This is in La Palma. A Hawthorne man who put his own semen in a coworker's water bottle.
Wait, as opposed to someone else's?
I'm just reading the story. In a jar of honey she ate and on her computer was sentenced to 2.5 years in jail. The judge also ordered 30-year-old Stevens Bilancastro to register as a sex offender. This is according to the Orange County District Attorney's Office. Bilancastro was convicted September 21st on 3 misdemeanor counts of assault and 2 misdemeanor counts of battery. In a statement, Orange County DA Todd Spitzer said, Bilancastro's sentence is the maximum allowed under the law and a recognition of the trauma inflicted on an innocent woman who was simply trying to do her job in the workplace. Prosecutors say that Bilancastro was obsessed with the victim, a woman he worked with in La Palma between 2014 and 2017. He allegedly touched himself 8 times in 2016, leaving his DNA in the victim's honey jar and spreading it onto her computer's keyboard and mouse. Oh, gosh.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, the woman ate the honey for a time without realizing it was tainted. All right, that's it. I'm done. This is the Mo Kelly Show. KFI, AM 640, live everywhere on the iHeart Radio app. Danny Max with the news.
A woman from Woodland Hills who's been missing for nearly 2 weeks has been found safe in Zion National Park, and police are searching for her.
This is the Mo Kelly Show, KFI AM 640 live, everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. That song, that bumper, is Bump and Grind by R. Kelly. And you should know by now, he's in prison for a number of charges. It's unlikely that he'll ever see the light of day. Just very quickly to bring you up to date, he was originally accused of child pornography in relation to a videotape in which it was alleged he was having sex with a minor. It was a VHS tape which was passed around the music industry. We all saw it. It was just everywhere. I'm not saying that we sought it out. I'm just saying it physically was everywhere, copies of it. It was obvious that it was him in that video. And it was also obvious that R. Kelly had been paying off people. I think it was surmised that he paid off some of the jury and some of the witnesses not to testify. I say all that to say that the saga of R. Kelly goes back decades, and people were trying to explain that he is and was then a sexual predator in the fullest extent of the phrase. Fast forward now, he's in jail on any number of charges, and he got his ass beat back in August. Jailhouse beating. It's not unusual, especially if you're in there anything related to child sex crimes. It's not unusual. But what is unusual in this regard is R. Kelly's lawyers are claiming in recent court filings that the attack was done, I would say, with the cooperation of prison guards. In other words, they did not try to intervene in any way. And maybe it's just me, Twala. Maybe it's just me, Eric. I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
I just am. Maybe I shouldn't be.
Sorry, I was dealing with some stuff in the studio. You're saying you're okay with R. Kelly getting beat up in jail?
Yes, I am saying that. I'll put it this way. I'm okay if the prison guards didn't necessarily run at top speed to save him.
Oh, yeah.
Oh no, no. I'm definitely saying that I'm okay with it. I'm saying that this should have been a regular occurrence since he arrived in the jail.
I wouldn't be surprised if the guards just turned their back as it happened.
There's an old bit that we did here on the Mo Kelly Show, and we would make reference to Independence Day. And there's a bit where we say Judd Hirsch is talking to the president on Air Force One and talking about Area 51. And he was saying, you knew then as far as what R. Kelly was in this respect. You knew that everyone knew that R. Kelly was a sexual predator, but they did nothing.
You knew then and you did nothing.
And so here we are. And so here we are. Some almost 20 years later, R. Kelly is finally in jail. And yes, he is probably being treated very poorly, not nicely, violently, all those things, because he skirted justice many times before. Yes, I'm saying he skirted justice. It was there was a very powerful and poignant documentary talking about R. Kelly's victims, which came out in the past year or so. It had a lot of the victims in it come forward and tell their stories. But we were trying to, when I say we, certain people in the media, including me, were trying to tell this story many years ago. And this was a good 15 years before the Me Too movement. So people were not willing to listen. And also, R. Kelly's star was at its apex. He was making a lot of money for a lot of people. But it was well known. Back when I was working for the Grammy Awards, when Aaliyah, the late singer Aaliyah's song Back and Forth had come out and R. Kelly produced that, and then they soon after got married, it was known then that R. Kelly was, you know, the correct term I think is like ebophile. It's not pedophile, but, you know, was interested in young teenage girls. It was widely known in the industry. But since he was a rising star in the music industry and making a lot of money for a lot of people, he was pretty much untouchable. And now that he's not as much of a star, well, now people can bring him down. And if he's getting his ass whooped in prison now and getting some that he should have gotten back then, while ago, I'm not going to lose any sleep at night. And honestly, maybe the U.S. Bureau of Prisons, you know, need to look into this and see if there's something that they did wrong. But if it turns out that they're not sanctioned in any way, they're not penalized, I'm okay with it. And I don't think that I'll lose any sleep over it, because this has been going on for quite some time. And we all know if you go to prison and you're in prison for rape or molestation, there's a target on your back and you're probably going to get hurt. And
especially
what happened?
Of children.
Right. And what happened? He got hurt. I don't know if you want to call that hood justice, prison justice, karma. I don't know how you want to label it. I'm just saying that I'm okay with it. And I don't think I'll have any regret with being okay with it. For as many people that I know of that he has victimized, I'm just saying that I particularly know of. Oh, that's another thing. Twala, they don't understand. We know some of these victims. We've dealt with some of the victims. They have been in our circle. We know them.
Yep.
So it's a little bit more personal, just a little bit more personal. He was on Jive Records. I knew a lot of people worked at Jive. I knew some of the artists that he worked with. You know Sparkle, don't you?
Sparkle actually came on our station and broke this story.
Thank you.
Day, Afternoon Drive with Ademu is when this story broke, and they tried to damn near have our station turned off. Okay, that's how much the industry turned against us.
I'm going to sleep like a baby tonight. This is the Mo Kelly Show, KFI AM 640. We're live everywhere on the iHeartRadio.
You knew then, and you did nothing.
App.
You'd all be dead now if it wasn't my David. None of you did anything to prevent this.
There was nothing we could do. We were totally unprepared for this.
Ah! Don't give me unprepared.
Come on, Julius.
It was what, in the 1950s or whatever, you had that spaceship?
Dad, no, Dad. Dad.
Yeah, that thing that you found in New Mexico.
Dad.
Where was that?
Not the spaceship.
Was that Roswell? Roswell, New Mexico, yeah. No, you had the spaceship, and you had the bodies. They were all locked up in a bunker. Where was that? David.
I don't know.
Area 51, right? Area 51. You knew then, and you did nothing.
This is the Mo Kelly Show, KFI AM 640. We're live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. There's the full clip. So if we reference, you knew then, but you did nothing. That's where it comes from. But if you know anything about me in this program, you know that I am a true believer when it comes to UFOs. Now, Twala Sharp, he believes in the zombie apocalypse. I'm here to tell you in the mathematical certainty of there being extraterrestrial life. Now, the phrase UFO, unidentified flying object, doesn't necessarily mean extraterrestrial life, but it does mean, for the most part, that it is not earthbound technology. It's beyond our technical or technological capabilities. And I've long said that I hope to live long enough to see disclosure. Well, disclosure is here. Disclosure in the sense that the government formally acknowledges the existence of unidentified flying objects. And they have. We've had a number of people on this program bordering on, you know, coast to coast with George Norrie. But we've had a number of people on this program talk about this at length. Senator Harry Reid has confirmed multiple times that the federal government has covered up UFOs for years. And he's a part of this new documentary called The Phenomenon. Quote, there's more than one, as in UFO, up there. Why the federal government all these years has covered up, put brake pads on everything, stopped it, I think it is very, very bad for our country. That's what he says in the documentary, The Phenomenon. And then he's asked, are you saying that there's some evidence that still hasn't seen the light of day? Harry Reid says, I'm saying most of it hasn't seen the light of day. And if you know the history of UFOs and suspected UFO sightings, it also includes our astronauts. When they went up to the moon, they felt that they had been watched or seen other craft out there watching them. There was a recent Russian launch Soyuz module to the International Space Station, and there was viewed what was thought to be an unidentified flying object near the International Space Station. There are all these events and unexplained phenomena and technology working in ways which is clearly beyond our technological capabilities at this time. And part of the concern, and we had a number of people come on the program, we're talking about how these UFOs were easily penetrating our aircraft defenses. They were penetrating restricted airspace. And so it became a national security issue. The question was whether it was Earth-based technology that possibly some great advance that China or Russia or some other nation, North Korea even, had, and then they would have some sort of advantage over us. But then it became glaringly obvious, like, no, this is not something that anyone can do at this point. And I would like my credit now to Wallace Sharp, because in the way that I mocked you for your zombie apocalypse thoughts, you mocked me about my UFOs. And it seems now that the government is going to increasingly come clean now and acknowledge that I was telling the truth and I was right. So go ahead and pat me on the back. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Look, all the props in the world. You have been on this from day one.
Eric, you can go ahead and jump it too. Go ahead and pat me on the back. I'll wait. I've got time.
Mazel tov. Congratulations. You did well.
Wait a minute. That doesn't seem enthusiastic. That doesn't seem sincere.
Sorry.
I've been working hard here.
I'm a little stressed right now, Mo. The Dodgers have bases loaded, bottom of the fourth, two outs, and they're down 3-2 right now.
Look, I'm trying not to watch the game. In fact, I would like a UFO to come take a ball out of the stadium. I will take any and all help at this point, because the Dodgers are going to give me a heart attack. I literally, and I told you this off air, I had to turn off the TV because it was distracting me. It was making it very difficult for me to concentrate, because the Dodgers started off by walking two people on eight pitches. The third guy got a hit, brought in a run, and the Dodgers have been behind ever since. This team is killing me, and the only thing worse than the Dodgers is the manager, Dave Roberts, because I don't agree with anything that he does. Anything. I second guess all of his decisions, because most of the time they are wrong. And since he has not won a World Series, I will continue to second guess him until they win a World Series. And if they lose tonight, they will not win a World Series. And, I know we're kind of digressing here, going from UFOs to the Dodgers. But yes, I'm with you. I'm distracted as well. I'm trying to take my mind off these Dodgers, and hopefully they will not, you know, fall apart again. But I just need everyone to be on record, since we will have a podcast of this show, that yes, Mo's been talking about UFOs for the past, 9 years that the show's been on KFI. And now he has been validated. It's been verified that all these UFO sightings, when I say legitimate, in other words, the government takes it seriously and they have been taking steps to keep, you know, if you want to go X-Files on us, the truth is out there. They've been keeping the truth from us for whatever reasons. Part of it is national security. Part of it is, I don't know, geopolitical politics. I don't know. But I do know that if you've been studying this subject, you realize that you cannot explain away everything. And since our personal technology is so much better now, in other words, a person with their home computer and phone, you can get much richer video than what we had maybe 15, 20 years ago. Everyone has a camera and everyone has an eye and can witness these events and document them in ways that are much better than ever before. And it's really weird, and I have to be sarcastic for a moment. It wasn't until that people started pulling out their cameras and documenting police brutality that people actually started taking it seriously. And I think it's true with UFOs in the sense that now that we have more phones and people can, I would say, document these events from multiple angles simultaneously. When you have 10 or 11 people with similar video from different vantage points, it makes it more difficult to discount it as doctored video or some sort of phenomena which can't be explained, or I should say, which can be explained with some sort of routine explanation. So, and I got to ask you, Danny, are you watching the Dodger game?
I am.
Are you nervous? Where are you from, anyhow?
Born in Chicago, grew up in Phoenix.
As Max Muncy strikes out to end the inning. Golly.
Yeah.
They are leaving more men on base. And that was their problem in the previous
story
years.
Of their, it's been the story of the Dodgers' life, my entire life.
Great hitting team, but they just squander so many chances. And after a while, you just run out of chances. See, now you got me watching the game again. Eric, I blame you.
I'll take all the blame.
I mean, you know that I can't concentrate on the show and watch the Dodgers. It'll take me out of my rhythm.
You knew then, and you did nothing.
And you just let me watch the game. And Danny Max, he's not a Dodger fan. He said he's from Chicago. He's rooting for the Cubs. He doesn't care about the Dodgers. He hopes the Dodgers lose. He doesn't want the Dodgers to win.
I don't have a dog in the race. I do not. But
how can you be from Chicago and not have a dog in a race?
Well, I grew up in Phoenix, but I'm not a big baseball guy. I'm a basketball guy.
Okay, so you're like the Phoenix Suns then, right?
Unfortunately.
Okay.
Hey, at least you said unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, but still, then you're not going to root for an LA team. I mean, if you're a Phoenix Suns fan, you're not going to root for the Lakers, and therefore you're not going to root for the Dodgers. You may not have a dog in the fight, but I wouldn't say you're completely neutral here. You don't want the Los Angeles to win another title.
I was glad to see the Lakers win just with Kobe's, you know, passing in January. I thought it was, you know, be very poetic if the Lakers, you know, won another ring. So I'm glad they got it. But no, I normally do not root for the Lakers.
Okay. All right. That's fair. I'll give you that. You have a heart. You can see the symbolic portion of the Lakers winning this year, given the death of Kobe Bryant. Okay, you're not a complete hater. You have a heart. All right.
Thanks, Mo.
We'll let you stay the rest of the show.
Appreciate it.
This is the Mo Kelly Show. KFI AM 640 live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. Now we go to Chicago and Danny Max with the news.
Free flu shots will be available at select locations in Los Angeles starting this week. Walgreens and CVS will give free COVID-19 vaccines to nursing homes.
Fake. Is it all just a simulation? Is it real? Is it fake? Is it all just a simulation? Is it real? Is it fake? Is it all just a simulation?
KFI AM 640 live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. This is the Mo Kelly Show. And I guess this will be like a companion piece to our last segment. I don't know about you, but sometimes I feel like I'm living in a video game and all the settings are turned all the way up to crazy, where we can have all the worst things happening at once. The difficulty level on this is like super expert. We have the pandemic. We have the fires. We have Donald Trump as president, the reality TV host. We have all these things happening at the same time. You think, okay, this can't be real life. Is this just fantasy? I've thought about that. Have you, Twala?
Every day.
There might be something to that. Now, according to the magazine, or I should say the media outlet, Scientific American, there's a study that shows that there's a 50-50 chance that we're living in a simulation. Don't ask me to detail all the math. That's way above my pay grade, okay? Can't do all that. But let me boil it down like this. There is this mathematical proposition that possibly we as humans have evolved into a post-human existence, and we run these simulations of what human, I will say ancestral human history might have been like, or different changes or results which could have happened. That's the story in Scientific American. It's really difficult to boil down. But if you extrapolate, if you look deeper into that, if that is true and we are living in a simulation in the way that the Matrix also posited this, there are moments and things which transpire which would indicate our connection to this other world outside the simulation. It would then explain the evolution of religion and God, how we feel connected to a higher power or a higher source, realizing that there is something beyond our understanding that we can't quite wrap our minds around. I've long thought that. I've long thought that the complexity of life and consciousness is probably much more sophisticated than our human intellect can handle. Eric, you getting ready to jump in?
Yeah, it's so fascinating that you're saying all this, because for a long time when I was younger, the video game Sims, I don't know if you're familiar
with it. Yes. Mm-hmm.
I've always thought that God is just sitting at his computer playing a game of Sims and we're just all characters in his Sims universe.
I thought of that as well. Go ahead, T.
No, I can see that. I like just the way Eric broke it down. I'm like, yeah, that makes sense.
And that goes back to the game settings of like, I wonder if I do this, what would happen? And what if we did like 7 hurricanes in a given hurricane season? What would the United States do? I wonder if the United States elected a reality TV show game host, how would that play out? How would the country fall apart, or what would happen? Would it descend into a second civil war? Ooh, let's turn up the racial quotient. You know what I mean? Just play with the buttons and see. It just seems like all this is literally surreal, beyond reality. It's hard to digest how much confusion is going on right now, how much disarray, specifically in this year, for it all to be random. That's what we're saying, that there is no, there was just nothing that is actually in control here. It's just a series of random occurrences.
I mean, I would almost rather believe the other. The UFOs.
Right.
That right there alone. Well, what if we are just an experiment of alien life forms who have put us on this blue orb, and that's why we're seeing so many of them, because they're all coming back to see what has become of this thing they created.
It makes you wonder, because I think humans in our arrogance, I would say, we always, hubris, we seem to think that we know everything, that we are the center of the universe, and we are the smartest beings of the universe. And you have to really think about it in terms of just technology. We've only had maybe 120 years of technology and maybe 800 years of science. I'm just guesstimating, spitballing. We haven't been around that long to know a hell of a lot, big picture. I'm quite sure there's plenty out there that we just don't know in our limited existence. When you think about time, we've only been on this earth a finger snap in terms of just the universe in existence in that regard. So I don't believe that humans are the be all end all. And I'm a person of faith. Well, let me put it this way. If I believe in a higher power, which has created all of us, why would he stop with us? When I say he, not in the sense of he, she, but just he is in the greater power, not sex. You know what I mean? Why would it just be here? Why would it be just us? And the flip side is, if you really thought about the majesty of the human body, the complexity of how it heals itself and all the intra-processes which go on in the body, you have to say like, gosh, that's not random. That couldn't have happened by itself. That's what at least I think. Go ahead, T.
I was going to say, what if it's gods plural and there is a god of this universe who is working on this experiment on planet Earth, And, you know, on a distant, you know, similar Earth, there is another guy on that one saying, oh, that's what you're doing over there? A reality show contestant or host as president? Oh, I got you over here. We are making a stripper president. You know, who knows?
A movie did touch upon that in a small degree. If you saw the Nicolas Cage movie, Knowing, it talks about the end of the world, but it also posits that it would just be the end of this world. There are other Earth-like worlds, and they start over, and they just put some Adams and Eves over there, and they start again with the same experiment to see how it evolves, which is not beyond the realm of possibility. If you are a supreme being, or at least one which can create and direct life, why would you put all your eggs in one basket? Because I'm quite sure there are plenty of points where they probably looked at human existence and said, okay, these mother fathers are not going to make it through. You know, they're probably going to blow themselves up because of nuclear war. They can't get over the fact that they don't like how another person looks. They can't give women the right to vote. You know, let's just start over. And even the Bible is rife with examples of just starting over from floods and what have you and pestilence. But, you know, it's not beyond the realm of possibility if you think about, or if you're humble enough to accept the fact that humans are not all that special. Big picture. We're really not. We just happen to be the apex predator, the dominant species on this planet for right now. Well, that makes me feel better. Everybody else feel better? Good? Yeah.
I'm good. Yeah.
All right. This show took a different direction real quick. This is the Mo Kelly Show, KFI AM 640, live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. Now we're going to get less metaphysical and get some real news with Danny Max.
Thousands of Californians purchased firearms during the first 5 months of the pandemic.
You're listening to the coolest 2 hours in all talk radio. The Mo Kelly Show. For all you comical
from comic books to superhero movies and tech gizmos.
Chewie, is that you?
It's time for another installment of Nerdorama with Tawala.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Nerds.
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 Nerds!
What is a nerd?
To infinity and beyond.
KFI AM 640 live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. This is the Mo Kelly Show. Tawala Sharp, King Nerdificent. Where do you want to start tonight? Should we start with Michael B. Jordan? Should we start with WandaVision? Should we start with Clive Barker or the Netflix Marvel character rights? Where do you want to start?
We have to start with Michael B. Jordan teaming with Reginald Hudlin to produce the Static Shock movie. That is one of the biggest bombshells to hit the nerdverse in a long time.
Now, it seems that Michael B. Jordan is an undercover nerd because he can choose whatever project he wants to do. Of course, most people most recently saw him as Killmonger in Black Panther. So he's staying within this genre. What is in it for him as far as Static Shock is concerned?
Well, beyond being a producer of one of the most important characters in DC Comics' milestone universe, Michael B. Jordan has proven that he has a knack for picking these unsung kind of superhero stories. Remember, he is also the same producer who brought us Ken. Yep. I don't know if you saw that. Ken was really good. And Raising Dion.
Mm-hmm.
Both of those are productions from Michael B. Jordan's Outlier Society. This, however, will be his first big budget production of a hero, which arguably is the first, I'll say, modern day black superhero. Beyond Luke Cage, beyond John Stewart, Green Lantern, you know, Blade and some of the other characters who, although they were African-American characters, Static Shock is the first modern era superhero. This is a young man who grew up in a gang infested neighborhood, and you know, but he is a nerd. He likes playing video games. He kind of stays to himself. And in his neighborhood, this kind of explosion goes off, giving everyone in the neighborhood superpowers. You know, those who were in the gang, they started calling them, you know, bang babies, you know, and Static Shock, instead of using his powers to, you know, for crime or to really take over the neighborhood, he said, no, I'm actually going to stand up and do something. This is quite possibly for me. This is one of the best stories to come to film when it does.
When you say produce this, do they have any type of timetable for this? Because, you know, there's no telling when any of the movies which were already in production, whether they're going to hit the big screen or if they're going to hit the streaming app. I mean, do they have any timetable on this one?
They don't have a timetable yet, but in different conversations that Reginald Hudlin has had, he has indicated that he is not opposed to it coming to the HBO Max app, where a lot of big budget DC product is coming. The Green Lantern series,
right?
That is no small undertaking, and that's going straight to the HBO Max app instead of trying to rush it to a theater and actually shortchange us as far as the storytelling goes. I would actually hope that they do this on the HBO Max app, because with what we've seen as far as production for series like Watchmen and Lovecraft Country, they know how to put together the wow factor in their series on HBO Max. I would really love it if they did the same with this.
Very quickly, I do want you to hit on how Netflix Marvel character rights, because you mentioned Luke Cage. We're also talking about Jessica Jones, Daredevil, and Iron Fist. Those characters existed on Netflix, but they weren't part of the MCU. They were taken away from Netflix, and there was like a 2-year rights moratorium where they couldn't use the characters. That is now expired. What is getting ready to happen with them?
Well, it is expired for, first and foremost, Iron Fist. Iron Fist, the clause on Iron Fist ran out on October 12th. Luke Cage runs out on October 19th. And I believe Daredevil and Jessica Jones, they run out closer to middle of November, and Punisher closer towards 2021. What this means is the MCU will now have the ability to use these characters freely in their film and future television, you know, projects as they will. Will they use the same actors and do the same stories? Doubtful. But the idea of being able to use these characters in their stories is great, you know, just period. And especially with what they're about to do with WandaVision, because they're about to go there with her powers, Mo. You think we've seen her powers? We have not.
I thought they held her back, because I thought she was one of the most powerful people in the MCU, and they really held her back as far as powers.
And now we're going to see why. We're going to see when she has a mental break, you're going to see how she has the ability to alter the very universe. Oh, it's about to get scary, man.
And that's supposed to come before the end of the calendar year, isn't it?
Yeah, that's they say it's supposed to be coming in December, although there are different, you know, sources out there that are saying we're supposed to be getting it by Thanksgiving. Don't know. Just know it is supposed to be coming out before the end of the calendar year.
Well, I mean, Disney and the Disney Plus app, they have a lot of good stuff coming, because they have The Mandalorian coming at the end of this month. They have Pixar Soul on Christmas. And yeah. What else is coming? Obviously WandaVision, but WandaVision, there's something else.
Still, the Falcon and the Winter Soldier. We're supposed to be getting that early 2021. Mm-hmm. And the Loki series. The Loki series will also be coming our way soon. And really, with Marvel, there's also supposed to be a Rogue One prequel series with Cassian Andor. So curious about that one as well. The production on that one is supposed to be finished. Oh, and the Bad Batch, based on the animated Clone Wars series.
That the Stormtroopers,
you know, clones that we saw. Yeah, that we were introduced to. Man, they're about to get their own series, which is said to be fantastic. Well, you know, anything that Clone Wars does is fantastic. So I don't know how they could possibly go wrong.
Well, plenty of stuff to look forward to. And something else to look forward to. When we come back, Bruce Willis, John McClane, Die Hard is back. And I am not exaggerating or kidding. No, honestly, John McClane made a big appearance today. And we'll have that for you. This is the Mo Kelly Show. KFI AM 640 live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. Now, Daddy Max has the news.
A woman from Woodland Hills who's been missing for nearly 2 weeks has been found safe in Zion National Park. Police are searching for a woman they believe stabbed a Metro worker to death at a rail station.
This is John.
Nice beer.
He just wants to spend Christmas with the family.
Is Daddy coming home with you?
We'll see what Santa and Mommy can do.
But when he gets stuck at the office party...
Merry Christmas!
It'll be a holiday...
Merry Christmas!
...he'll never forget.
Ho, ho, ho.
Welcome to the party, pal!
This Christmas...
It's a time of miracles, so be of good cheer.
Only John can drive somebody that crazy.
Get ready to jingle some bells... ...and deck the halls... with bows of Bruce Willis.
Come to the coast, we get together, have a few laughs.
Alan Rickman.
Do you really think you have a chance against us, Mr. Cowboy?
Yippee-ki-yay, mother.
Together in the greatest Christmas story ever told.
I got some bad news for you, Dwayne.
Hans.
Booby.
Eat it, Harvey.
Holy shit.
I'm starting to get a bad feeling up here.
Merry Christmas.
Die Hard.
AFI AM 640. We're live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. I got to tell you, Die Hard is one of my traditions. Every Christmas Eve, I watch Die Hard. I don't care what anyone says. It is one of the greatest Christmas movies of all time. That was back in 1988. That movie came out, and they did a remix of the promo, as you heard, to officially acknowledge that it is a Christmas movie. With that in mind, people have wondered, you know, within the industry and in fan groups, what really happened to the original cast of Die Hard within their movie universe? We know some actors have passed in real life, but as far as what happened to maybe Theo or Argyle from the original movie, because we didn't see them in any of the sequels. Well, Die Hard Battery did a 2-minute long commercial, which they released today. And if you want to see it, you can go to my website, MrMoKelly.com. I've just posted it. MrMoKelly.com. But you can hear a pretty good aspect of it right now.
Well, you wanted the quiet life, John. Dead batteries, empty streets.
Theo?
Welcome to Advance Auto Parts.
I need one of those. Is there another way out?
Come on. You kidding me?
Did you know we have free installation?
Yeah, I got it.
Mac? Argon? You still driving this thing?
You're getting blood on the seats, Mac.
Good God.
Man, I just paid this off.
Argon, you all right? We're getting out of here, buddy. Just got to change my battery. Night, pal. Argon, I'm getting out. Yeah, baby. Happy trails. Get out of here. Take this car, Nolan. I'm coming for you! Hey, that's my line.
Die Hard Batteries, owned and sold by Advance and CarQuest Auto Parts.
You got to go see it. Go to MrMoKelly.com. diehard.com right now and watch it. It is quintessential Die Hard. You get to see Theo, the computer wizard from the original Die Hard. You get to see Argyle. You won't recognize him. Let me just tell you, you won't recognize Argyle. To be fair, those 32 years in the intervening years, as far as, you know, then and now, people have changed. But I will say this, I thought it was great the way that they took all of the subtle jokes of Die Hard and threw it into the commercial. I'm surprised they actually didn't do this sooner because, you know, outside of Bruce Willis, they really didn't have to pay a lot of money for the stars. Now, they paid a lot for the special effects. They paid a lot for the special effects, but I thought it was well done. It was smart. It's already going viral. And if you're a Die Hard fan like me, it was easy nostalgia. Tawala, what did you think of it?
This actually just made me want to see McClane that much more. The prequel Die Hard film that is in the works right now, I'm actually looking forward to it that much more because the Die Hard legacy, it's real for me.
Yeah.
I like pretty much all of them. I'm not mad at any of them, really. I'm not.
And I know Eric didn't see any of them, so I won't even ask. So I might as just, well, just go on over to Danny. Danny, are you a Die Hard fan?
I've seen 1, 2, and 3, and yes, I think the first one is a masterpiece. Don't they use Die Hard, the first one, as a case study for like screenwriting students in college just because it's so perfectly put together?
I would not be surprised. It's one thing I do notice about Die Hard. If you ever watch Roadhouse and you watch Die Hard, you will notice that the musical cues are exactly the same. It's written by The music is written by the same composer, and they use some of the same score for both movies. If you look at the fight scene between Jimmy, the thug, and Patrick Swayze's character, Dalton, listen to the music there and listen to the music when Hans is getting ready to die in Die Hard. It's exactly the same. And I noticed it. It's like, wait a minute. And I had to actually go back and listen and watch in the other movie, Roadhouse, to see it's exactly the same. Same music cues. Nothing is different.
Hey, two classic movies.
I know. It was good enough for Roadhouse. It's good enough for Die Hard. Both of them have turned into cult classics. So obviously they were doing something
only
right.
Only one of them introduced the JCPenney's to town. Only
one of them. That was Brad Wesley. I brought JCPenney's here. Ask anybody. We got to get out of here. So find me on social media at Mr. Mo Kelly on Instagram and Twitter. Go to MrMoKelly.com and you can see this Die Hard 2020 2-minute commercial video updating you on John McClane, Argyle, and Theo, and more. It's really great. We'll see you next time. KFI AM 640. We are live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.
Does Tim Conway Jr. really care about you, your family? If he did, why would he be on right at dinner time? Stand up for family dinners. Say no to Tim Conway Jr.
We are KFI AM 640, and we approve this message.
KFI.
And KOST HD2.
Los Angeles, Orange County.
Live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.